Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on Internet Radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to today's show. Excited to be here with you. This is going to be an amazing show. This is the Trump versus Hillary taxpayer winners and losers. And I have to report we have a riot going out front. It's not pretty. But as soon as they heard we were going to be doing a show on Trump, all the rioters came out. And so we've got police escorts, the whole nine yards here. No, I'm just joking. But, of course, it's crazy. Gosh, I don't even know. I didn't even want to do this show in some ways because I'm already sick of the political scene right now. And we're not even through convention. I don't know what I'm going to do this fall. But you know what? I know this is kind of a bitter pill for many of you to listen to this show, and as if you haven't had enough of the news cycle on Trump and Hillary. But hey, we got to do it. We're doing it for you. So today's show is all about the tax consequences of Trump versus Clinton or Trump versus Hillary. I don't know why it's Trump versus Hillary. Maybe because, you know, Clinton could mean one of two characters, right? So anyway, so we're going to bust this down, and I'm excited to introduce some special guests I've got on the show today. Matt Sorensen is out of pocket. He is speaking at a RITA conference, which is a Retirement Industry Trade Association. I think I got that right. He's over in Denver, Colorado, speaking at that today, so we give him a pass. But I've got three amazing guests with me today. Now, these are I went inside the family on this one because these guys are experts in the trenches. You know, Matt and I, we spout off all of our little strategies and tips, and then we leave it to our fearless attorneys and CPAs to make it happen on the front lines. And so I'm excited to have these guys with us. On the law firm side, a regular guest on the show, Kevin Kennedy, an attorney out of our Phoenix office, helping clients nationwide with business and tax planning and estate planning. Kevin, appreciate you being here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
I should say Kevin did author the article on our KKOS blog that went live yesterday on Trump versus Hillary. So he knows his stuff. If anybody's got this down, it's Kevin. So Kevin, thanks for writing that article too. You ready for us?
Ready.
All righty. Now, from our home office out in Southern Utah, we've got our two fearless managers that run the day-to-day operations of tax return prep. I mean, these guys are seeing every line item on your folks' tax returns. These guys are amazing. Usually we just put food under the door and let them go out once in a while. And today I was able to get both of them to come on the show. I'm grateful to have them here with us. First, we've got Cassidy Carter. He's kind of been in the family off and on over the years and just a great contributor to our firm and our clients. He's a CPA as well. Cassidy, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
You bet. We also have Rick Taylor, a CPA in our firm that I constantly barrage with little questions and tips and things that I'm trying to come up with. I'll bounce him off Rick. He's a technician, folks. He is in the details, and so I love it. So, Rick, thank you for being here with us as well, another CPA manager of the firm.
Hey, it's good to be here, Mark.
All right. Well, guys, now you can sit back and just relax here for a few minutes. For those that are regular guests on the show, or sorry, regular listeners to the show, you know we've got to do some housekeeping. We're going to do our legal tip of the week, our tax tip of the week. We've got our question of the week where you, the listener, can win a copy of one of our books, mine or Matt's books, and it kind of gets your juices flowing, so we have fun with that. So, and you know, a lot of our listeners have emailed in and said, hey, Mark, we like the tips because they have a variety of issues that you tackle, and it kind of helps all of us in different situations. So I'm going to start out with a tax tip, and then we're going to we've already asked Kevin to kind of share a legal tip. So, but first, let's hit the tax tip of the week and see where we go.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Well, I'm going to throw out a tax tip here, and I may even ask for Rick to give a little comment if he'd like. Rick, again, I bounced off some of this him before the show again. He's always a good sounding board for me. But the tax tip of the week is the home office deduction. Now, this is a big deal, and I did an article on this in the blog this week. There's a video, corresponding video on YouTube. I encourage all of you to go check it out. If you're getting our newsletter, it's right there in the newsletter, links right there. If you haven't got the newsletter yet, you can go to markjkohler.com and pick that up, both the newsletter and get over to YouTube and the video. But here's the tip. See, there's two methods out there for home office now. And I got to say right off the bat, if your accountant's trying to shoot down the home office deduction because it freaks them out, guys, you got the wrong freaking CPA. 20 years ago, when the home office deduction really got unleashed in the tax code, there was some audits here and there because people took it, you know, got too aggressive, and it just created a chilling effect where all these old school accountants are just scared of the home office. They think everybody's going to get audited if you take the home office. My dear listeners, I can't remember the last time I had a client or a new client come to us getting audited on home office. It is not a big deal. As long as you don't get too greedy, remember, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered, don't overdo it, you're going to be fine. Take the home office deduction. So I got to get that out there right off the bat. But there's two options. There's the standard, take a percentage of your house, square footage, home office deduction. And of course, this is your primary place of business and it's an exclusive area of your home, all that, yada, yada, yada. Read the article on the details there. But the point is you can do the math on the square footage of your house and then take a percentage of your home mortgage interest, utility bills, do some depreciation and all that crap. Now, on a client that's got a serious home office, that first option could be a good fit. But here's my tip. The simplified option, which just the IRS approved 2 years ago, so simple, hence why they call it the simplified method. It's only $1,500 a year, but it's basically $5 up to 300 square feet. And your home office is going to meet 300 square feet, right? I know it will. So you're going to be at $1,500 for the year. That's great. And here's the beauty. There's no depreciation recapture. You still get to take 100% of your mortgage interest as an itemized deduction. And there's none of this calculation of percentage of this expense and that expense. It's simple. It's easy. And it's low-hanging fruit. And it's just a great little deduction, boom, to take on your LLC with your rental property or in an operational business from your house. You may say, well, Mark, I could write off $2,000 or $3,000 if I did the traditional method. You know what? Is it worth going through all that headache? I don't know. So I'm going to throw out to Rick there. Rick, do you have a follow-up on that? What do you think?
Well, yeah, sure. And you're exactly right. And, you know, the IRS, they don't treat us very good in a lot of ways. But there are a few little nuggets that they throw out there that they do treat us good. And the simplified home office deduction, that's one of them. It's one of those easy things that you can do, and it really works well. And actually, Cassidy did an analysis where he comparing the simplified to the actual, and in his analysis, we found that the simplified actually is more beneficial in a lot of situations for the home office.
Wow. Okay, Cassidy, Rick's calling you out. Can you take that? Are you going to take credit for that? Tell us about it.
Yes, so we ran an analysis
where we had some situations where taxpayers were subject to the self-employment taxes and situations where they might not have been. And in some cases, it does make a difference because, especially for taxpayers that do not have their itemized deductions phased out, it allows them to take the full 100% of their mortgage interest and the real estate taxes and things like that. So the simplified method really is an in addition to deduction that people can take advantage of. And like you've pointed out, it's very simple to calculate. And so it would be a shame to not take advantage of something like that.
Woo! Love it. Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Cassidy. And before someone careens off the side of the road falling asleep listening to the home office deduction, we're going to move on. So I love it. Chalk it up to another little tip that will save you thousands, folks. Get on it. And, again, if your accountant's poo-pooing the home office deduction, it may be time to reevaluate who you're working with. So be careful. All right. Now, we've got our resident expert on legal issues here in the office today, or on the show with us, Kevin Kennedy. So let's go over to a legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right, Kevin. I want to feel clean after this. Don't make me gross out here. What do we got?
All right, so this legal tip comes from the wild and crazy world of estate planning. And in fact, I'm taking the tip from Matt Sorensen's article that he wrote this week. So I'm kind of here proxy. It's kind of fun being, I have to say, I feel a little bit cooler, a little bit sexier, just being in Matt's shoes. I like it. So he gives a tip, and the tip for the radio show is about estate planning, and it concerns something that affects everyone who has young children. And that tip is you want to make sure that if you have young children, if something happened to you, heaven forbid, you have in your estate plan written in there who's going to take care of your young children. In other words, who's going to be the guardian. Okay, so Matt gives, seven tips. I'm not going to go through all of them, but he gives seven tips about, well, who should you name as the guardian of your children? I'm going to just highlight a couple of them, and then you can read the article for yourself, but I do recommend reading it because it's really practical, and this is something that I think affects a lot of people. One of the tips he gives, Matt, you know, I've known Matt for a while. He doesn't talk about love very often. So you got to take this where you can. He talks about, you know, obviously you want to make sure that whoever you designate as the guardian of your kids, you know, there's that mutual love. Is there a good relationship? I mean, this is someone who, if something happens to you, your kid's going to live with day in and day out, you know. So even though, you know, your brother-in-law has oodles of money, if the guy doesn't get along with your kid, you know, you need to take that into consideration. So that's the first tip. Yep.
Yeah, and Kevin, I got to say, too, I don't know if I want to appoint a helicopter parent, you know, over the tiger parent? That was a big thing a couple of years ago, right? Helicopter versus tiger, I think that's what it is. Man, tough love, baby. I don't know if I need my kids sitting, you know, playing Xbox, you know, 7 hours a day. So, no, I like that. Take it to heart. I like it. Okay, keep rolling.
So, let's see. Maybe one more here. He talks about the practical consideration, which is, okay, if you name so-and-so, so maybe you name your brother. Maybe your brother, you know, is great with your kids. So they love Uncle Bernie. We're using a Bernie theme here, I guess. They love Uncle Bernie. And so you put him in your will as the guardian of your kids. It's surprising how many people, especially if they go out and do a will on their own on the internet or something like that, they don't let Uncle Bernie know that he's been named as the guardian, or they don't even talk to Uncle Bernie, because I think one of the essence of this tip is you may think that person's a great fit, but it's probably a good idea before you actually put them in your will. Maybe have a conversation with them, because there may be some things that you know they want to tell you about, and vice versa, just to make sure that it's a good fit there. So let them know, talk to them in advance, make sure they know, gosh, okay, if something happens to Mark Kohler, I gotta take care of his rugrats, okay, and make sure they're okay with that. So,
I like it. You know, and I can throw out several tips here too, because I just love talking about appointing guardians for kids. But I won't steal your thunder. Folks, you got to get in and read Matt's article. But I will say this on that meeting. So just to highlight that second tip, Kevin, is that it can be a really emotional, spiritual, bonding meeting. I think when you sit down with the people that you love and say, we want you to be our godparents of our kids and the godparents of our kids, people really are touched by that. And now again, you may get that shocker. They're like, thanks, but we don't want to be there.
Yeah.
And so kind of, you want to make sure Uncle Bernie's cool with that. But it's a really good conversation to have, and it's a very bonding one. So I like it. Good tip,
like
Kevin.
It. Thanks.
All right. Well, name the guardian for your kids. Now, many of you already know, if you're on our email list, that it is estate planning month. 3 weeks out of the year, in and around Memorial Day, while you're thinking about visiting a cemetery and the ones you love, don't forget to do your own personal planning so you don't leave a mess for the ones that are alive still here and the ones you love. So we've got a special on estate planning. It's just once a year, and it's our fourth or fifth annual round. So clients are starting to wait around for it, take advantage of it, and then throughout the year, if you don't take advantage of it, we recommend no bungee jumping, skydiving, or extreme sporting activities. Stay safe, stay healthy until next year when you take advantage of the estate planning special. But anyway, send us an email if you're interested. We'll get you some info. Okay, now, before we get into the Trump versus Hillary, and I really feel like I ate something bad yesterday and I've got some food poisoning because this is not pretty, guys. Oh, and you got to hear it. You've got to hear this. So I'm glad many of you already clicked on this podcast when you saw what we're going to be talking about because it's so important. But it's I'm going to forewarn you. You got to make sure you've got a strong stomach for this. But let's go through our question of the week. What we do every week is we pose a question to you, the listener, and the first one to respond via email wins a copy of either mine or Matt's book with free shipping, autographed for your perusal and enjoyment. And Matt's question last week, I get the honor of giving the answer for that and then posing another question for this week. Last week's question was, what happens if you pass away? And because, you know, it's estate planning month, so we're kind of, you know, sticking with the theme here for a little bit here and there. But if you pass away and you don't have a will and you don't have a trust, a.k.a. Prince in Minnesota and the debacle that's going on out there. What happens? Who gets your inheritance first? What is the order of consanguinity? That's the term, frankly, specifically. Who does it go to first? Well, we had a winner. I'm embarrassed. Our winner emailed me and said, Mark, here's the answer. And they even emailed during the show. They were listening live. And then I've misplaced the email here this morning. So I can't mention their name. I feel bad. I wanted to recognize them. But I will be getting back to you and sending you, confirming which book you wanted. But we did have a winner. And the order is first, your inheritance would go to your spouse, if married, when you pass away. If not married, it goes to your children. And if your children are, if you have no children or posterity living, then it goes up to your parents. And if your parents aren't around, then it goes up to your grandparents. So this whole time, your siblings, brothers and sisters, are sitting around going, hey, what about me? I had to put up with this bozo growing up with him or her. But they're on the sidelines. It goes to your spouse, the kids, the parents, the grandparents. And if there's no one in that line, which ironically is in Prince's situation, then it goes to brothers and sisters. So now, that's the general rule in 99% of the states. There are some very unique exceptions to the rule, but that's the general rule. So we did have a winner for that question of the week. Now, before we get into the topic, let me pose another question for this week. And the first one to respond, if you're on your smartphone, please send an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at kkoslawyers.com, or Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com. And the first one to respond with the correct answer will win a copy of our book. So here's the question. Let's say you're helping take care of mom or dad, grandma or grandpa, in a continuing care retirement community, some sort of facility that may be providing some medical services as part of their retirement home benefits. So some different things that may be covered with a care facility. If you're helping pay for that, are you allowed to take a tax deduction for that? So let me repeat that. Are you allowed to take a tax deduction when helping cover the medical costs of your mom or dad in a nursing home or your grandpa or grandma in a nursing home? What, now, you don't have to get too specific on the rule. I will explain the specific guidelines of if and when you are allowed to take that deduction or maybe not at all. So I don't want to give away anything here. So the person that emails in the most correct answer to that question will win a copy of our book that you can give away to as a great birthday present. Save it for Christmas. Our books are a great gift. So please email in. That's Mark or Matt at kkoslawyers.com. Okay, so without any further ado, we're going to heed the call and answer the question, who will be the winners and who will be the losers if either Trump or Donald Trump, to be specific, or Hillary Clinton are in the White House? Wow, this is a big deal. This is a big question. So for those just joining us, I've got three panelists joining me today. I've got Kevin Kennedy, an attorney out of our Phoenix KKOS lawyer's office. I have Cassidy Carter, a CPA and manager in our accounting firm, and also Rick Taylor, a CPA manager at our accounting firm out of the Southern Utah office. So we've got these three panelists that I really want to hear from on this. And since Kevin took the time to set the stage with an excellent article that's at the kkoslawyers.com website, there's a blog article, 2 to 3 pages long, with a lot of detail here. We'll start with him. So, Kevin, I mean, let's just get it out there. I'll certainly give my color commentary here and my opinion, but before we get it, I've been talking way too much. Kevin, what's your initial take as you started to analyze Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton's tax plans? What were some of the big takeaways for you, just kind of at a general level, as you were going through it?
Sure. So, at a high level, I would summarize, as I read through Hillary's plan, is it's pretty similar to kind of how the way things are under the Obama administration as far as the tax code goes, but probably a little bit worse. And I think with Donald Trump's plan, for those that have critiqued his plan, in fact, I think they're saying there's a lot of tax cuts, and the issue is that there will be a deficit as a result. So if we're just talking about more money in my pocket, I think that I would say that Donald Trump's plan seems to be a little more favorable to the average taxpayer.
Well, I want to bring that up and talk about that. Let's start with Trump for just a minute, since you finished with that. I don't know. I mean, it is true. This is a common theme with Trump and a lot of his policies that he's been talking about. Is it's hard to pin him down. A lot of critics have said he's inconsistent. He's kind of all over the place. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt, and let's assume that this plan is – and we're going to talk about some of the particulars of this plan – but he does talk about a lot of tax cuts. Let me get the first one, and then Cassidy, you tell me what you think here in a second. But personal income tax, anybody under $50,000, zero. You will not pay taxes if you make less than $50,000. For anyone making $300,000 or more, you're going to either pay, less than $300,000, but greater than $50,000. So that's right. So less than $300,000, more than $50,000, if you're in that middle area, kind of the average middle-income American. You're going to either pay a flat tax or, well, a percentage rate of 10% or 20%. Anybody above $300,000 is going to just pay a 25% rate. This is huge. I mean, this is great for the poor in some sense. If you're under $50,000, I don't want to say poor. That's not the poverty level, $50,000. But, you know, under $50,000, you're going to pay zero. If you're over $300,000, you get a huge tax cut from 39% down to 25%. And then everybody else in the middle, 10 or 20%. I think it could be a disguise here where those in the middle might pay more. Cassidy, what's your initial take on these cuts of Donald Trump? Is it realistic? And how are they going to make up the difference in revenue?
So that's a great question. I think that it is. I mean, on the surface, it does look a lot nicer than some of the tax rates we have. What is it? Six tax brackets, I think, at this point. And Hillary's plan has even proposed another one on top of that. So the simplification is nice. However, in order to me personally, I care about, you know, having a government that's solvent at some point. And so in order to raise that extra revenue, it would have to come from other places. And based on what I've read, and I know we're going to touch on this topic eventually, a lot of that seems to come from a lot of the small businesses and the business income side of things, which for small business owners, if that's their livelihood, that might not be something that they want to welcome.
Yeah, great comment, Cassidy. And folks, for those that are Hillary fans or Trump fans, be patient. We're going to give equal time to both proposals. But since we for some reason, I just kind of went with this Trump one first, no particular order here from a political standpoint. One thing that's interesting, Cassidy, is that even though he simplifies things and reduces rates, one of his plans would be to eliminate and phase out all deductions on your personal return except the charitable deduction and a mortgage interest deduction. So if you want to give money to charity, you get a write-off. If you want to buy a home, you get a write-off. Other than that, all itemized deductions disappear, which is a lot of health care options, investment expenses, property tax expenses. And so for those middle-income Americans that rely on a strong Schedule A, that's a little scary. And so even though you might have a lower rate, you're going to be paying on a much larger AGI. That was kind of my takeaway there. Did you see that as well, Cassidy? Staying with you for a second.
I did, yes. And I'm happy to see out of those two deductions that are staying, the mortgage interest and the charitable, I mean, those are considered sacred in American taxation.
Yeah.
And so I am glad to see that those are staying. But, yes, that will be a big change. And, you know, I mean, there is something to say about the fact that maybe the rates will be a little bit lower, that it may allow taxpayers to have the feeling that they can estimate their taxes maybe a little bit better. But even then, you know, clearing out that, you know, the uncertainty behind it that a lot of people feel, hey, am I going to owe, am I going to not this year? Even then, you know, it might be a bad answer to look forward to every year. And so, you know, that is a big change.
Yeah, and that's simplicity. There's something to be said for simplicity. I'll give it Donald Trump some, you know, credit there. But really, let's say that people's AGIs go up a little bit, a few less write-offs, but your tax rates are a little lower. Let's even say it's a zero-sum game. Now we get to the added expense of business taxes. Now, Rick, let me get your comments here. This is a big deal because he's going to start implementing a tax on pass-through companies. Are you kidding me? And the small business owners, these millions of small business owners, are going to now start paying more taxes. Rick, tell us what this looks like. What's his proposal here?
Yeah, you're right. This thing where it's putting a tax on the pass-through entities, this is a really big deal. Maybe one silver lining that we can look at with this is knowing Washington, D.C., and you know, they go in with these big plans, but sometimes and most often things don't ever really happen. but if this one were to pass with the small businesses, the small flow-through entities getting taxed, what that would mean is your entity structure world would be completely turned upside down. Most likely, S corporations would go the way of the dodo bird, and there would just be a whole new slew of maybe tax planning. And maybe that's a way to look at it, is look at it as a tax planning opportunity to look at your entity structure and see which structure is going to be best for you.
Yeah, and let's talk specifics here. What Trump's proposal here is a 15% flat tax on all businesses, whether C-Corps, S-Corps, and LLCs. Are you kidding me? So all of you that have an LLC now, imagine paying 15% flat tax, just like Microsoft or AT&T. What? So this flat tax is where he hopes to make up some of the revenue, and then create this a flat tax in it for corporate across the board. And so without getting too political here, I'm going to say it now. I mean, I'm all for saving taxes, and on the face of it, again, like Kevin said, Trump appears to be saving taxes for us. But I don't know how it's going to add up. Where is this revenue going to be made up? And do I want it to be made up on the backs of small business owners? Oh, scary. I mean, Kevin, back to you. Before we jump over to Hillary for a minute, and we'll be bouncing back and forth, any follow-up on that Trump plan? I mean, I know you really got into the nitty-gritty when you were preparing that article.
Yeah, a couple of things. And as I say this, you know, I realize I'm the one that wrote that article. So what's interesting is if you look at neutral, well, I guess what is an arguably neutral source such as the Tax Foundation, where a lot of this information came from, as well as the respective candidates' sites themselves, this pass-through tax, this 15% tax that we're talking about, the Tax Foundation interpreted it certainly as, you know, sort of in addition to your personal tax rate. So, you know, Trump's done a good job of simplifying the personal tax rates, lowering them. But, you know, reading some of the commentary from, you know, quote-unquote neutral sources like that, they seem to indicate that it would be the business tax. So if you have an LLC, you'll pay 15%. On your business tax, and then you'll still have your, you know, personal tax rates, which is effectively, you know, double taxation. Well, another article was written about this same topic. So Forbes actually wrote an article, and it was they tried to call out someone from Trump's team, and this is coming from Matt Sorensen, because Matt Sorensen and I were talking late last night. So the Trump representative couldn't say either way that it would be in addition to or on top of the personal tax rate or whether it wouldn't be. They just said that Trump's plan speaks for itself. So what's interesting, and I'll conclude with this, is on Trump's website, he uses an interesting word, and this goes to your point, Mark. I mean, Trump's the master of, you know, giving himself enough wiggle room and being able to, you know, kind of turn a corner, and then now with a new set of voters, you know, spin his positions a certain way. And I think he's intentionally left this a little bit more vague than I think maybe it's been presented here. He uses the word within. What I mean is he says in his tax plan, the business tax on the pass-through entities will be, quote-unquote, placed within personal tax rates. So if you give him the benefit of the doubt, And you think certainly Trump's not going to be so audacious as to impose essentially double taxation on the small business owner, which, by the way, I think you talk to most people, and they are suggesting that he is, and that's how I wrote my article. But if you give Trump the benefit of the doubt, that word within means that it would basically be lieu of. So if you made $100,000 in your LLC of net income, you'd pay 15% tax on that. And then you wouldn't have to then pay an additional, you know, after that's been taxed, you wouldn't have to pay at the personal rates. But as I said, it's not clear. It's not clear. And in fact, when Trump's reps were asked about it, they couldn't answer the question because I think, and I'm speculating here, I'm thinking Trump has intentionally left that a little bit vague in case he needs to, depending on, you know, where, what direction he needs to go. So that's my comment there. So if you give him the benefit of the doubt, that's how it would play out. But I think most people are saying, no, it's exactly as you guys are talking about and as I wrote this article. So
yeah. It's scary. Now, okay, so let's change speeds here and run over to Hillary's camp, if you will, not even figuratively speaking. Let's go to her camp and from her website, and we have to say she's a little more consistent. I mean, there's pros and cons with both of these candidates, but she has been very consistent and very clear, and we know where she stands on her tax plan, and Rick, I this is my initial take here is obviously it's bad for the super rich. I mean, this is just which we kind of expected. It's going to be much of the same as the Obama administration, but she's like, we still need to make up some ground here, so I'm going to go after the super rich, which is sometimes the typical target of a Democratic candidate, which millions and millions of Americans say, fine with me, just don't hit my pocketbook. Would you mind, Rick, go through some of these quote-unquote super rich changes that might affect more of those making $1 million or more or other categories? What, just give us kind of a rundown here if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. It is the super rich that she's targeting. Several years ago, the whole Buffett rule got talked about, and she's looking to implement that, which is a 30% minimum tax on gross income over $1 million. She's looking to raise the capital gains and dividends rates up to 24%, and I believe there's a threshold of $5 million on that. So just the whole personal taxes on the more wealthy she's looking to increase, just pretty much across the board from what I can see from her plan.
Yeah. And I, just add a couple more to it, the 43% bracket, which, Cassidy referenced another bracket to consider that would kick in on 5 million or more. And, you know, I mean, I'm trying to be a successful guy. I'm trying to make money. But, you know, when Warren Buffett has a lower tax rate than me, I have to – I'm just going to say, again, I'm all over the board on the political issues here. I know I may offend someone and give someone something to cheer about on another comment. But for crying out loud, if a minimum fixed rate on anybody making more than $1 million, maybe that's a little low. I don't know. I've got clients that make $1 million and they're not – living the high life either. It sounds like it, but you live in some markets in the country. It can be a very high cost of living. But that gets some traction with a lot of people. And so anyway, so we've got higher capital gains rates. We've got this Warren Buffett, and it can be scary for someone making significant income. Cassidy, any thoughts on the Hillary tax plan from your perspective that you think that stands out to you?
Yes. So in line with the legal tip and everything, when we talk about estate planning, her estate tax, I believe, is going from 40% to 45%. And
yeah.
Even worse, what I feel like is they're going to try to bring that cap, that exemption amount, back down to $3.5 million, which $3.5 million is not that large of an estate. And so, you know, I mean, that's a lot of people that will be subject to that estate tax. And so it's, you know, going to require a lot of tax planning when people thought, you know, a few years ago it was low, but it's gradually gone up over 5 million and people probably let out a sigh of relief. And here we are thinking 3.5 again, you know, that's really not that large of a state to have to worry about this tax.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to say a general takeaway as well, just to add to this on Hillary's plan, is that if you're a middle, and anybody chime in here if you want to agree or disagree, just because I'm the host doesn't mean you can't call me out. I have a thick skin here. but I think the general takeaway from the Hillary camp is that if you're a middle income taxpayer or even under $50,000 a year, as Trump kind of carves that section out, if you're a middle income taxpayer, I don't think you're going to see much of a change from Hillary's tax plan. But if you're making $1 million or more and you're building up significant wealth, you got a target on your back there. But I think all of us can at least take a sigh of relief, and we're talking about 80 to 90% of Americans. The Hillary plan is not going to impact you negatively. Anyone? Thoughts?
Well, no, I don't disagree with that. The concern that I would have with it is the incentive that's there. So the plan that she's proposing, it disincentivizes the normal American person to really shoot for the stars. That's my takeaway with it. If you want to make more money, you're going to have to pay more taxes. And to me, that can be a problem as far as unincentivizing people to go out there and really go for it.
I like it. That's Rick Taylor, red-blooded American Tea Party candidate. Rick Taylor. No, I'm just joking. I know Rick. Poor Rick. He's like, what? No, but Rick makes that your classic Republican argument is if you keep taxing the super rich, are they going to keep investing in the economy? Now, let's talk about the Romney loophole. Oh, okay. Now, this strikes fear in generally, I'm not making over $1 million a year, folks. I don't have visions of grandeur in my life. So the Hillary plan is not, it doesn't scare me in some of these other respects, but this is the one that does. And that is the Romney loophole. Kevin, one of our self-directed IRA legal planners, helping clients every day maximize the value of their Roth or IRA or 401k. Can you explain this Romney loophole? Oh my gosh, that Hillary's kind of got on board with.
Sure. So yeah, this was something I think, again, Matt Sorensen isn't here. So yeah, we need to vicariously, represent him there. And so what's interesting, I think, about the Romney loophole, and first of all, Trump doesn't propose that, but Hillary does.
Explain the loophole too. Explain this. Tell everybody what the loophole is first.
Well, what's interesting, the loophole is it affects retirement plans, and the purpose of it is it's called a loophole because guys like Mitt Romney famously have millions, hundreds of millions of dollars stored away in a tax deferred retirement account, outside of the taxation system, and so it's a loophole in that sense that there's no real cap. I mean, you can have $1 billion in your retirement account. Now you have annual contribution limits, but as far as the overall amount, I mean, you can make a killing, and that's what guys like Mitt Romney have done. So on her plan, and I use the verbiage that she uses. She says she just wants to limit the ability of the very wealthy to quote unquote game the system by sheltering all these millions of dollars in a retirement account, which obviously is at very least tax-deferred, or if it's Roth, tax-free. And she thinks that's unfair. She thinks that that's not good for our country. That's not good for our system. But what's interesting is I couldn't find in her plan, a specific dollar amount as far as, well, what are we talking specifically here? And I think that might be by design because, again, I think these candidates – are kind of leaving themselves some wiggle room, and yet they want to be specific enough to say, look, I will, if you're speaking for Hillary, I will put in some sort of cap on this because that's just too much money that's being stored away in a tax deferred account. Some of that needs to be taxed for the sake of the country. So that's what she means by closing the Romney loophole. But as far as like a specific number or cap or income limitations, I didn't find any of that in her plan. And so as maybe this proceeds to the general election, someone might require her to, okay, we need some more specifics here, but that is something that is part of her plan, that she would put some limitation on retirement accounts. So guys like Mitt Romney don't have millions and even hundreds of millions of dollars being stored away in a tax-deferred account.
Yeah, and for us that are huge advocates of self-directing, which allows you to really exponentially increase your retirement account, we've got a number of clients with several million dollars, even in a Roth IRA. And we really encourage clients to invest in what they know best. And to think that you might get taxed on your retirement account for being too successful inside your retirement account is a scary thought. Of course, there'd be a lot of lobbyists trying to stop that. Now, I want to give a couple thoughts here in general, and then I want to give time to each of our panelists here to share any takeaways from their perspective. But let me share my takeaway here and kind of set the tone for some closing comments from everybody. I've often been really skeptical of the Steve Forbes plan, which really got traction 5 or 10 years ago in the one flat rate. You know, let's simplify, one flat rate. And, you know, on the face of it, everybody's like, oh, that's great. No. But my first takeaway in this big debate between Trump and Hillary is that Trump's kind of pounding that drum again, too. Let's simplify. The problem is our tax code is really a machination of all these years of helping motivate our citizenry, our Americans to do things. Put in handicap access, get a tax credit. Buy a home, get a tax deduction. Invest in your retirement account, get a tax write-off. Give money to charity, get a tax write-off. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of tax deductions that motivate us to do things and improve the economy. And when my first reaction to Trump saying, oh, we're going to do flat rates and get rid of all these deductions and flat rate this and flat rate that, and I'm really skeptical that all of the special interest groups and all of our elected senators and congressmen are going to go along with that. Remember, any plan Trump comes up with, any plan Trump trumps up, is going to get, you know, the crap beat out of it when it goes through Congress. And we know that no president's going to have carte blanche authority to push through any tax plan that isn't going to be just a combination of compromises and modifications in Congress. And so I guess on one hand, I'm pretty confident that we're not going to see those simplifications take place. I really just don't think they're going to happen. And I'm going to say this for you listeners out there that really think Trump's onto something, creating this simplicity. I don't think it would ever get through Congress in that sort of situation. And his goals of reducing tax rates across the board, where the government giveth, the government taketh away. There's got to be a reconciliation somewhere with other revenue somewhere. And that could scare the crap out of you when you find out where it comes from. It could blindside you. So in summary, I do like the fact of paying less taxes, but Hillary's plan, for the most part, at least we know what we're going to get. We know that it's going to target the super rich or those making 500 grand or more a year in different categories. And barring the Romney loophole, I don't have a lot of complaints there because I at least know what I'm going to get. So anyway, that's my initial takeaway. I want to throw it out to the group here. Cassidy, we haven't heard from you for a minute. Let me give you first take here. Cassidy, what's your takeaway and any thoughts for our listeners as they analyze these two plans?
Thanks, Mark. And your comments are right on. I think when we talk about simplification of the tax code, I mean, that's really easy to say and it can pick up some votes here and there, but ultimately it's not easily done. I think ultimately, if I'm a small business owner right now and I'm out there listening to the show and I'm thinking, okay, what do I need to do or how can I prepare myself? Ultimately, rule number one is keep doing what you're doing as far as running your business. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many times we have, you know, clients and come to our firm and they say, oh, well, I did this crazy thing because I was trying to save taxes. And it's like, you know, that's great. You saved 35 cents on the dollar, but you just paid the dollar. And ultimately, you know, if I'm out there, my goal is to just do the best I can, make money in the business, be as successful as I can, and let the tax code more or less shake itself out. So I think that's the most important takeaway is, you know, we can't let ourselves become paranoid or, I guess, anxious about this kind of stuff. We need to study up on it. But ultimately, our goal is to go out there and to be as successful as we can and do what we do best in our businesses.
Oh, Cassidy, great points. I love it. And great comment. Just keeping our head down and making good, practical, day-by-day business decisions. And I'm going to give, you know, my hero, Dave Ramsey, a shout-out. You know, let's get out of debt. Let's pay our bills. Live within our means. Use good tax strategies. Good comment, Cassidy. Now, Rick, I mean, I know Rick's probably advocating, let's all move to Puerto Rico. Let's go off the grid. Maybe Costa Rica even. I don't know. Give me something sexy I can hang my hat on, Rick.
Costa Rica, baby. Costa Rica. My thought on it isn't far away from what you're thinking, Mark. Congress is things get stuck in Congress and don't get passed. And, you know, if you want something to die, send it to Washington, D.C. All these proposals, they're in my mind, they're just to you know, like you said, trump up the discussion. I don't think the flat tax thing is going to get passed ever. I could see a little of the things of Hillary's if she gets in, a few things being passed, like the estate thing, the exemption going down. I could see her getting that through. The Romney loophole, I don't know that she could get that through unless it's at a very, very high limit. But going along with what Cassidy was saying, yeah, I mean, these things we should be knowledgeable about these types of things, but at the end of the day, it's not the make it or break it thing for us. And Costa Rica or Puerto Rico, yeah, no thanks. America's just fine, but that's my takeaway.
I like it. Great comments, Rick. Well, okay, we're going to give our final thought to Kevin Kennedy, the man that wrote the article that kind of spurred on this show today. And he cannot bring up Matt Sorensen again. I don't know what you're feeling, this loyalty to Matt. Hey, he's not here. You know, that sucker, you know, it's he, you know, quit giving him any benefit of the doubt here. We'll throw.
Mark, can you hear me? I can't hear you guys.
I think we've misplaced our radio show host here. Kevin, are you still there?
Now, Kevin, you're still there?
You can.
Mark, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm hoping that you were continuing the torch there. I got cut off. I know it sounds a little crazy with me calling in on a different method here. Were you able to finish your thoughts on your closing comments?
No, I got cut out too. Right as you introduced me for the final comment, I was cut out as well. So I haven't even made my comment. I think.
Okay.
I think Secret Service must not like what we're saying, so they cut us off.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, go ahead. So what's your final takeaway?
Well, so I definitely agree that as far as certainty, and especially for the average American, if you compare these two plans, which, hey, don't forget, you still have Bernie Sanders, you guys. Come on now. But if you compare these two plans definitely, I think for the average American, I mean, it's if right now it's not such a a heartache to pay your taxes. I don't know that you're going to see much of a detrimental impact with Hillary's plan. And with Trump, you know, I do agree as well with your guys' comments, but I got to say this. I'm not surprised that three accountants don't like a plan that takes out all these deductions, kind of puts you guys out of work. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Fair.
So, but in conclusion, I definitely think that the small business owner who we advocate for and make up the majority of our clients should probably, you know, before they cast a ballot for Trump, get that man and get his campaign to commit to this 15% pass-through tax. You know, we can't let him be so squirrely with this, because that's just, you know, unheard of, you know, to impose such a tax on these pass-through entities on top of, you know, personal tax rates after the fact. So I would say to everyone listening, get Trump, you know, if you're thinking about voting for Trump as a small business owner, get him to commit to that either way. What's he doing there? Don't let him be so squirrely with that. So,
I love it. Kevin, thank you so much. And I want to, again, say thank you to our panelists, Kevin Kennedy in Phoenix, Rick Taylor, and Cassidy Carter out of the Southern Utah office, for all of you guys joining me. Great comments. Really appreciate it. And, you know, boy, I want to encourage all of you, don't give up your research. Keep looking at the candidates' tax plans. Ask questions. Be inquisitive. We'll be here, maybe even having another show before the end of the election cycle. But thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be here next week for another Refresh Your Wealth show. Matt Sorensen should be back on track by then. So thanks, everybody. Have a great election cycle. There you go. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.